On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Come Monday, it'll be all right.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I am Ron Van Dam. Yes, I am. Don't argue with me. I'm not in the mood for this. I am not in the mood for this. Quick, what day of the week is it? No, it's not Saturday. God, come on, get with it. It's Sunday. What? It's not? It's Monday. Okay, sorry. Well, another day, another round of allergies. That's the way I look at it, because that's what I wake up to every morning. Pollen. God, it's all over the place. Okay, enough of my problems. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Well, good to be with you today. My name is Ron Van Dam. I've been doing this for a long time. All right. Don't placate me. It's funny how I play sound effects and then I talk to myself. It's kind of weird, isn't it? What do you do for a living? Do you talk to yourself? I do. That's what I do. I've been talking to myself for 30 years, and I haven't been in any type of therapy. It's amazing. Have you ever been to a therapist? Come on, be honest. Look, we have a relationship now. It's a beautiful relationship. I don't know you. I don't know what you look like. I don't care about you. I have no concept about any of your life whatsoever, nor do I care to. This is a wonderful relationship. I will never drive you to the airport. I will never help you move. I'll never answer your emails. It's fantastic. We don't have to swap any type of bodily fluid. Well, that's up to you. It's a great relationship. So let's be honest with each other. Have you ever been to therapy? Yeah, I know. A lot of people have, and there's nothing wrong with it. As a matter of fact, when someone says they've been to therapy, I kind of appreciate them more because they're being honest and they recognize in themselves some amount of conversation that they should be having with a third uninterested party who sucks you dry in the wallet. I think it's a fantastic concept. You sought out some information and some guidance. There's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, again, I find that to be a little sexy. No, I'm kidding. It's introspective, and I like introspective people. I like people that have a soul and have a conscience and all those kind of thing. I like people like that. And that's it. After that, I don't like anybody. So anyway. So let's be honest. So I like that. Here's something about me that you may not know that I have in common with Joe Biden. No, not my age. Oh, God, seriously. I have something in common with President Joe Biden. We both like sex in a certain... No, that's not... Hey, stop it. That is a joke. That was a joke. I don't know much about that, about him, as far as I'm concerned. Joe Biden and myself, both when we were younger, we stuttered. Yep, we both stuttered. To the point where we were not functional. This happened to me in high school and junior high school. And I guess in grammar school, if I could remember that far back, but I can't because I smoked marijuana when I went to college. And that wiped out a lot of my memory. But I did stutter. And my parents recognized I did. I would have something in my brain that I wanted to say, but my mouth would not cooperate fully. And I became very quiet when I was a child because I knew that I could not get my words out, and I didn't want to go through that or the embarrassment or the situation of people listening to me trying to say a word that I could not say. And my brain would know that I couldn't say it, so I chose not to talk. Odd that I ended up as a talk show host. Yeah, I know. So my parents sent me to therapy in New York City. His name was Dr. Snyder, and he was a nice man, a very nice man. And we would sit in his office. It was rather plush. He had this big chair, and he sat me in a big chair, and he sat opposite me, and we talked as much as we could. And after about 3 or 4 years of this therapy and about $17 million, probably, I don't know, I didn't pay for it, I stopped stuttering. And I don't stutter anymore. Maybe every once in a while a word will have trouble coming out, but that's incredibly rare at this point. Joe Biden, your president, I mean, he really is, by the way, he stuttered, and he has the same problem. And when it seems like he doesn't know what's going on and has trouble forming words, it's not because he's senile, it's because he stutters. He had a stuttering problem, probably more major than mine, and maybe wasn't completely resolved like mine. You should know that. And I wish Joe would tell people this, or this would be part of his biography or something, where people understand, oh, okay, he's not stuttering because he can't think of something to say. He's stuttering problems. It has nothing to do with his age or anything like that. He's an incredibly intelligent man, as I am. Anyway, I stuttered, and now I don't. And I went into television and radio as a career 3 decades ago. That's the proud thing that I wear on my shoulder. That and a gigantic wart that had to be removed about a year ago. So I went to therapy. But I'll tell you something about therapy. For a long time, I wanted to be a therapist because I thought I was good at it. And I probably would be, because through my whole life, people have come to me for some type of resolve, asking questions, that kind of thing. They found something in my personality that was introspective enough where they felt comfortable with me. So I thought I would go into, because, man, all you got to do is sit in a chair and say to people, and what do you think? And what do you think? And yeah, and what do you think? And tell me about your childhood. And what do you think? And what do you think that's about? And why do you think that happened? And why did you think that you reacted that way? Why do you think you do that? Why do you think you can't overcome that? All you say is, why? What do you think? That's all. Because therapy is basically helping a person resolve their own issues. You can't resolve it for them because that doesn't build any character. It doesn't go anywhere. But building character is being able to take care of yourself and resolve your own problems with some help to think it through. That's what therapy is or should be. It's also a gigantic cash vacuum cleaner. It sucks everything out of your wallet, your credit cards, your cash, your money, everything. It sucks it in like a big Hoover. And I would love to sit in a chair and just suck in cash from people whom I don't know, yet I feel psychologically that I'm helping them. I'm making them very poor financially, but I'm helping them in another regard. So that's what a therapist does. At the end of the session, whether it be half an hour or an hour, you have the privilege of saying, well, our time is up for today. What a beautiful muttering that is. I've listened to your crap and your baggage. I've put up with your crazy insanity. And now I'm telling you, that's enough. Go home, get out of here. Our time is up for today. It's fantastic. And I thought this is what I wanted to be. I think I'm really, really good at this. I know I am. But here's the problem. I don't like people enough to actually do that. I do not have the tolerance to listen to somebody's problems. I just don't. And I feel bad about sucking the cash out of them. I don't feel good about that. But I need to charge them for my time. But I cannot get involved in other people's baggage. It's not healthy. I think for a therapist, you have to be understanding and sympathetic, but you have to be also a piece of cardboard and say, I've heard this person's problems. Now time is up. Go home. I don't know if I could do that. If someone had incredible problems and they were shown in front of me, I couldn't just go home and have a sandwich. I'd say, oh God, you know, Robert was in therapy, and then, oh man, Robert's got prior. I could not detach myself. A. B. Why do I want to hear everybody's shit all day? Why would I want to do that? How much can my brain take listening to people's problems all day? I don't think I want to do that. Also, I don't know if I want to sit in a room with somebody for an hour. Who's that fucked up? I don't think I really want to do that. I make it a habit to stay away from fucked up people as opposed to inviting them into a room and closing the door with them. I don't think I want to do that. Ron, what do you do for a living? I'm a therapist. What kind of people do you work with? Fucked up ones. Fucked up ones. Well, that doesn't sound good. It's not. It's not good. That's when I decided I'm not going to be a therapist. I'll be a talk show host. It's the same thing without the people. Anyway, that's just a little insight into me. Now give me a little insight into you. What have you always wanted to be? An ice cream truck driver? What? Me too. Oh, when I was a kid. And I heard that little bell or that little jingle coming out of the car on the truck, I mean, and the little truck had a little speaker system in it or something. And it had this little jingle that would play as it was going down the street. I was brought up in Teaneck, New Jersey. I don't know why either. And there was a Good Humor truck. We all know Good Humor trucks, don't we? Oh, that's right, people of this generation, Generation P, actually I'm Generation P because that's I get up every night to pee a few times. I guess I'm Generation P. But this newest generation, they have no idea what I'm talking about. A Good Humor ice cream truck? What? Of what do you speak? For a little kid, this was like heaven, like Jesus was coming. But it wasn't Jesus, it was the ice cream truck. Same thing, really. And the kids would come out of the woodwork all of a sudden and run into the streets and, carefully. And the truck would stop, and this guy, usually dressed in all white for some reason, I don't know why, because I guess he thought he was Jesus. And there were never any female ice cream truck drivers. That just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. That's how archaic our society was. Only men could do this job. Women didn't drive trucks, much less ice cream trucks. Come on. Anyway, this truck would stop in the middle of the street. The kids would run out, and they would get their ice cream. This was actually just before dinner. The parents didn't care for the timing of this. It'd be better if the ice cream truck came after dinner, but didn't work out that way. And it was a Good Humor truck. In New Jersey, we had a truck called Mr. Softy. And I thought Mr. Softy was wonderful. Little did I realize that when I got older, the term Mr. Softy would have nothing to do with ice cream and was a derogatory comment.
Yeah. I dated Ron last night, or should I say Mr. Softy.
Well, how was the sex?
Mr. Softy, you know what I'm saying?
Anyway, that's my impression of a girl, by the way. The Mr. Softy truck had a jingle to it. Played a little song, and when you heard that song, it was do I hear the song? It was wonderful. So you wanted to become an ice cream truck driver. I get that. I really do. What could be better than driving a truck down the street loaded with ice cream? And kids coming, running out, and kids are, giving you little pieces of money when you give them ice cream. I mean, and you see the expression on the kid's face, like, oh, my God. What a wonderful thing to do. See, I don't particularly care for children as a humanity, as a existing thing. I don't care for them too much because they're undercooked. Basically, they're undercooked. They're not mature yet. They're undercooked. And they're nasty. Don't know what they're doing. Have no concept. Making mistakes all over the place. But running up to the truck for a minute, I can handle that. Just have to be careful not to hit them. Other than that, I think I could have been an ice cream truck driver. And of course, in the back of your mind, you're figuring, well, when the shift is over, I can have a couple of ice creams. They're not going to know the difference. Because back then, they didn't know what inventory was. They didn't care about that. Here's ice cream. Sell as much as you can and give us the money later. They didn't care. I tell you what I did do when I was a child. I had a paper route. I won't get into it right now because that gets kind of confusing, but I actually delivered papers for quite a few years. That was my first job, and it was quite successful. I sold lemonade on the corner of my house. We had a house that was on the corner of, it was on a corner. Oh, I'll tell you. And I set up a little TV table and a chair, and I would sit there and sell lemonade, and people would stop, not because they really were thirsty and wanted lemonade, but because they felt sorry for me. And then I realized, now that's a business. Got to find a business where they feel sorry for me. Up, talk show host. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I do have a guest joining me that I think you'll find quite interesting in the long run. But first, there's this short but handy commercial word.
Hi, this is Bob Robinson from Bob's Handy Around the House. I'm a local handyman. I've been in business for the last 50 years on my own, doing light repair work in our area. Whatever you need done, carpentry, painting, floors, tiling, yard work, I can do it all for you. I'll come to your home and do the work for a very reasonable fee. Naked. I should probably mention that I will be naked while I do this work. Buck naked, not a stitch on me, waving in the wind, in my birthday suit, showing what God gave me, naked as a jaybird. I'll be naked the whole time. I show up naked, I do the work naked, you pay me while I'm naked. Bob's Handy Around the House, Bob Robinson. You can look me up on Facebook, where I am naked.
Hey, good morning, Ron.
Hey, Brian, how are you today?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm great. Brian Moody is a frequent guest on the show. He's an executive editor at Kelley Blue Book. And thanks for being with us today, Brian.
Yes, thanks for having me.
We're talking about something that everybody's interested in, and that's the best family cars, according to Kelley Blue Book. Everybody's looking for, I guess a family car would be an SUV. Is that properly translated?
Yeah, also minivan. But remember, SUVs come in different sizes.
That's
so we
true.
Actually broke it up into two categories this year. Two-row SUVs and then three-row vehicles.
All right. Depending on how big your family is, I guess, or what your future needs are. We start off by saying that car buying has taken a whole new turn with inflation. Price is almost everything now. Interest rates are everything. I mean, it's become a bit more complicated than in the past, hasn't it, Brian?
Yes, that's exactly right. So doing some research ahead of time is going to be very helpful.
Yeah, a lot of research ahead of time is the way that goes. Okay, let's get started. What's on the list and why?
Well, like I said, we broke it up into these two categories, two-row and three-row. Not everyone needs a three-row SUV because a smaller vehicle like a Honda CR-V or a Hyundai Santa Fe is going to be a little bit more affordable, and it's going to get better gas mileage also. So those two vehicles are on our list. Also, we like the Toyota RAV4. The RAV4 is very reliable, it's practical, it's versatile, all these kinds of things, but it also has a couple of choices not every SUV has, at least small SUVs. You can get a gasoline-powered version, a hybrid, or a plug-in hybrid. It's important to know how you're going to use the car to know which one of those will be best for you because they'll be different prices, of course. We also have two minivans on our three-row vehicles list. That's the Honda Odyssey and the Toyota Sienna. The Toyota Sienna only comes as a hybrid now, but we also like the Odyssey. It's a the Odyssey is a little bit more engaging to drive, while the Sienna is a little bit more fuel efficient because it's a hybrid. The Kia Telluride is an excellent SUV. It's a three-row SUV, about midsize, so not super big, but not a compact either. It's just such a good-looking car. The way it drives is very rewarding. It has beautiful interior materials, textures, colors, patterns, all that, and the exterior colors also. You think you're buying a luxury car, but it's really more like between $40,000 and $50,000. So not inexpensive, but also not as expensive as we've seen. And Hyundai Palisade and Honda Pilot are ones that we like too, and those are on our list as well.
It's interesting how those brands that were considered to be the lesser are now incredibly technology full and very efficient and sometimes even better choices. I mean, that's kind of turned around too, hasn't it?
Yes. I think if you look back, let's say 20 years at Kia, I would even say 15 years or less, it was mainly a car that you bought because it's all you could afford.
Right.
Whereas today, Kia has made an intentional choice to make compelling designs, good-looking cars, and then on top of that, they offer that warranty in case you're worried about reliability and your 100,000-mile warranty. So it is worth reconsidering certain brands that you may not have considered because most people today haven't bought a car for quite some time.
True, true. All right, let's talk about online or going to a physical place like a dealership. I know that the online's been pushed a lot. Even some major companies, that's how they do it. It's all online, and they deliver the car to you sight unseen. Are there any tips as far as that's concerned?
Well, what we say is it's better to have a combination of those things.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've done surveys, and even younger buyers, such as millennials, they enjoy going to a physical dealership and
sure.
seeing how the car looks.
Sure.
I think, this is my personal opinion, a lot of people, because of COVID and the maybe not so great response to COVID, people, I think, are tired of looking at stuff online.
Yep.
They want to see in real life and have experiences Bravo. In real life. And so do your research online, of course. Find out your credit score. Find out where the dealership is. Find out what the prices are. And look at some, just look at some pictures. And there's going to be a couple of cars that right away you'll be like, oh, that's ugly. I don't want that.
Yeah.
So knock it off your list. Then when you have a smaller list, then you can actually go down to the place and say, hey, I need to go for a test drive. But be sure to bring all your stuff.
Yeah.
Bring your child's seat. Bring your kid's soccer gear. Bring your dog, maybe, or booster seats, whatever it is.
Ow.
Bring all that with you.
Yeah.
And that's when you can make the most of the in-person visit.
That's great. That's not only advice for buying a car, but for everything. I think we're sick of the online stuff. Let's get back to a little old school where we can stimulate ourselves by moving around and going somewhere. I agree with you 1,000%. I love going to the dealership. It's exhilarating and it's fun, but then you got to deal with the bargaining, like you're buying a flying carpet or something. It's just... that's tough too, the bartering
that's
part.
Going away too though.
Oh,
one of the things we learned from COVID is that's diminishing.
Good.
We actually surveyed customers and they said one of the things that they dislike the most about the car buying process is negotiating.
Yes.
So many dealerships are saying, hey, listen, there's no more negotiating. We're going to have one price and there's one price only.
Good.
And of course, to make sure that their price is fair, compare it against other places in your area. Don't just take their word for it.
Right.
But when you go to buy a TV, you don't go in there and say, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you, no, the TV is the price that it is.
Yes.
So some dealerships are moving toward that. And many consumers say they prefer that model because that's the price. Here's the payment. Do I have the loan or not? And then you just move on with it.
Yeah. Price. That always bothered me where they give you a price and then you say, no, I'm not interested, start walking out. And then they say, well, wait a minute, how about this price? And says, whoa, if I didn't start walking out, I'd be paying more. And then you don't trust.
Right.
So that's where that gets a little sticky. Let me ask you another question here, because people are really thinking of buying. They got to do something. Their leases are running out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what's happening here. What's the best time of month to buy a car? Beginning, middle, end?
Generally speaking, you can get a little bit better of a deal, or they may offer maybe the same price as everybody else, but maybe they have, free floor mats or car washes or oil changes, something like that. Usually at the end of a period of something. So say at the end of the week, at the end of the month, at the end of the quarter, at the end of the year.
Gotcha.
Those types of things, because sometimes automakers will give the dealership an extra incentive if they sell a certain number of cars. It may be $100 per car. It may be $25 per car.
Gotcha.
Now, the dealer doesn't have to pass that on to the customer if they don't want to, but they can certainly choose to. And so knowing that they're going to make their cap, let's just say, or their bulk of selling the car, that may earn the salesperson or the dealership a little bit of an extra incentive, and that may end up turning out better for you.
Okay.
A lot of times with these one-price dealerships, though, that doesn't apply. You just go every day of the week, every day of the month, just pay the same price as the next guy and the next guy and the next guy. And that's probably better in the long run.
Very good. You know what I'd love to talk to you about someday? I know we don't have time today, but subject-wise, I think most Americans have no idea what the difference is between a hybrid and a gas electric. Where do you plug it in? How far does it go? Should I get electric? Is it not feasible just now? There's just so many questions. Maybe next time around we can do that. But I'll tell you something.
I'd love to do that.
I think
we have something planned along those lines. I think that's an excellent topic, because I don't think the average person realizes.
No, not at all. I think I'm a little above average and I have no idea what I'm talking about, which you can tell if you listen to the show. But the answer is everything's at Kelley Blue Book. They cover all of this. And this is, we're discussing just the tip of the iceberg. the most important thing when you're buying a car, looking at a car, is being educated and knowing as much as you can. And that's when you go to Kelley Blue Book. It's KBB.com. And it's not just about family cars. It's about every facet of this whole genre of buying a car and keeping a car and knowing what you're doing with the car. It's great.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and we also have to know the value of what we have here, because as you said, a lot of us have some older cars because we haven't made a move in quite some time now. What's the value of what I have? And that's also answered by going to KBB.com. So until next time, Brian.
Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful as usual. I'll be back again tomorrow. What is tomorrow? I don't know. It's the day after today. Whatever. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. But until that time arrives, well, I wish you peace.